I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
My bridesmaid, Alla, the actor, she stayed in Odessa. With her theater closed, she just wanders empty boulevards, making selfies with stray cats and making patriotic face paintings. I'm afraid Alla won't last long under occupation. My bridesmaid, Alona, she lives in Kyiv, but she's from Mariupol. Alona's mother, her only family member, she still lives there. Russians block all the communications, so Alona loses contact with her mother. After 3 weeks of no word, watching on the news how her hometown is systematically destroyed, she can't take it anymore and goes to find her mother. Alona has to make a journey of 800 kilometers to reach Mariupol. First, she goes to Ukrainian checkpoints, where soldiers can't believe she's going to a city where everyone is fleeing. Then, the invaders' checkpoints. Alona says she has never been more afraid in her whole life, but somehow they let her through. Alona finds an abandoned bicycle on the outskirts of Mariupol. She rides that bicycle through her hometown, which has been largely destroyed to rubble. She takes back alleys and paths, avoiding snipers and tanks, passing the countless bodies of civilians on the streets. Sitting under a bombed-out apartment building, not sure she can go further, suddenly a little girl emerges from below the ground with little pancakes for her. That pancakes give Alona strength. They give her hope. She reaches her mother's apartment, which is somehow still intact, opens the door, and finds her mother drinking tea at the kitchen table. She takes her mother's hand and rushes her out of Mariupol. Everyone I have ever known now have their lives torn into before and after.
This is Play Me, your digital theater. We transform the hottest contemporary plays into bingeable audio dramas. I'm Laura Mullen.
And I'm Chris Tolley.
Welcome to Play Me. You're listening to the show that transforms theater scripts by award-winning writers into bingeable audio fiction. You just heard a clip from today's feature, the award-winning First Matey Man of Odessa, the real-life love story by Matthew McKenzie and Maria Homotova.
Part one is available on Play Me Now. But in case you've missed it, here's a quick recap to help you catch up. In 2018, Matt, a playwright from Canada, and Masha, an actor from Ukraine, meet while working on a theater project in Kyiv. They hit it off and stay in touch through emails over the year, even though they're far apart. But as they start feeling closer, doubts about making a long-term relationship work start creeping in. Then, just as the global pandemic takes hold, Masha gets some surprising news. She's pregnant, and Matt is on the other side of the world.
This is the conclusion to First Matey Man of Odessa, written and performed by Matthew McKenzie and Maria Homotova.
So, the first thing I do straight away is study the implications of two Pisces being together. Our union will be a blessing or a total disaster. We are dreamers. We have rich inner worlds, so we have to emerge from our heads from time to time. Otherwise, we will be totally confused with what is and isn't real.
I need to get my life in order in a hurry here.
I need to find a home for my future wife, future baby, Nevi, and I. I need to be close to family.
Packing up in Kyiv, I move to Odessa to await Matthew's arrival.
I drive from Toronto to Edmonton. Back in Alberta, I must assuage the concerns of my mother, who is absolutely flipping out.
Oh, my parents have met Matthew, but I still haven't had the opportunity to meet Matthew's parents yet.
What is giving my mom some anxiety is the double whammy that Masha and I are from different countries and that we have technically only been dating in person for 5 weeks. So, I set up a virtual meeting where Masha can meet my family. After some standard pleasantries and getting to know you games, my mom goes from being deeply worried to liking Masha more than she likes me by the end of charades.
Yes!
I begin to believe I will love Matthew's family. They are odd, like me.
Days turn into weeks, turn into months apart.
I reach the first trimester. It's so hard not to be with you right now.
How was the ultrasound?
It's a boy.
I thought we agreed it would be a surprise.
During the ultrasound, I closed my eyes. But my mom couldn't wait to tell me.
She shouldn't have done that.
You're right.
I should have been there for that moment.
But you're not here, my love. I needed her support. Do you think I want to be with my mother on the first ultrasound? You think I want to be with my mother when my belly grows? Every day, I wake up and check if Ukraine is in the green zone for travel. Every morning for 89 days.
So, with the international travel ban still in effect, I take a gamble and book my ticket to Odessa in 1 month regardless. My flight will take me from Edmonton to Toronto to Frankfurt to Vienna to Odessa.
The evening Matthew gets on his flight from Edmonton to Toronto, the international travel ban is still in effect, so he's unable to check into his connecting flight to Frankfurt.
But by the time I touch down in Toronto, the international travel ban has been partially lifted.
For the first time in 4 months, Canadians are now allowed into Europe.
But my connecting flight from Vienna to Odessa has been cancelled.
Oh, it's like the gods are tormenting us.
Not the gods, but Michael, the Air Canada ticket agent, who, as he slowly chews a chocolate chip muffin, informs me that my ticket to Europe is now void and that there is nothing he can do about it.
You must remain calm.
Come morning, I talk to a competent ticket agent who reroutes my flight from Frankfurt to Istanbul.
And then direct to Odessa.
I board my plane.
Canadians are now allowed into Europe, but no one can tell us if this includes Ukraine. We have no idea if Matthew will be allowed out of the airport in Odessa or he will be deported upon arrival.
Arriving in Germany, the first Canadians to set foot in Europe nervously step forward at customs. I am permitted to catch my connecting flight to Turkey.
Now the idea of Matthew's arrival is so real. I have horrible nausea, but I go to the airport anyway.
Touching down in Istanbul, I line up for my flight to Ukraine.
Only a short flight to Odessa, oh my god. Will he recognize me now that I look like a little hippo?
Right ahead of me, a pack of American military contractors are told they can't get on the plane and they lose it on Turkish Airlines.
Aw, Americans behaving badly.
By the time I step forward with my boarding pass, the Turkish attendant is extremely flustered. Then, the Americans resume their barrage, with one of them going so far as to threaten to fill his pants if he's not allowed on the plane to use the toilet. So the attendant just gives me a grim nod and lets me board.
You are so close, my love!
On the flight to Odessa, half the Americans have somehow managed to browbeat their way on board. So my strategy when we touch down in Ukraine is to simply be at the back of the line again. And once again, the Americans lose it on the Ukrainian border guards. And I stand in line for well over 2 hours as they raid.
My ankles are swollen. I have been waiting for 5 hours outside arrivals, but I will not go.
By the time I get to the border agent, I am the last person in line. The agent says to me, "Oh, you're from Edmonton. So is my cousin. Welcome to Ukraine."
Matthew has been granted entry. But when he goes out of the airport, he's so determined to complete his mission that he marches right past me.
We marry on a perfect summer morning in the heart of Odessa.
My friends and family gather at the matrimonial hall. My bridesmaids, Alla and Alyona, fuss over the flowers in my hair. Alla is an actor like me. A true artistic soul, very airy lady, God's dandelion. Alyona is the most reliable person I know. She's my best friend. She's like an arm or a leg. Everything is ready for the ceremony, but minutes before the beginning, my groom is nowhere to be seen. Matthew, I need you here. Matt!
I got the time wrong. Everyone's always speaking in Russian.
He was dancing in his hotel room.
I make it.
Just in time.
I don't understand a word of the ceremony.
I translate when necessary.
Of the 3 men attending our wedding, 2 are named Yura. Of the 6 women attending, 3 are named Olga.
Following Ukrainian tradition, my parents lay rushnik leaning at our feet, and we step over the threshold of our new lives together.
Continuing in tradition, we use fabric to wrap our hands together, signifying being bound to one another. To do this, we use my late grampy's Métis sash. Former clergy, I had always dreamed of my grampy marrying my wife and I, so it is nice to feel him with us on this day.
After the ceremony, we meet virtually with over 100 of Matthew's friends and family. Matthew's mother cries through her speech, filled with sorrow that she can't be with her son at his wedding.
This session is a blessing. While no one I know is present on one of the most significant days of my life, it feels like my friends and family are with me.
At the wedding table, my bridesmaids get everything in order.
Alla and Alyona tell me I'm extraordinarily lucky to have a mother-in-law as kind as Olga. Without a hint of irony, Alyona informs me that the high rate of alcoholism amongst men in this part of the world is directly attributable to mother-in-laws.
Ever the romantic, Alla is so deeply impressed that Matthew managed to sneak into Ukraine to marry me. My father says that Matthew has panty, a kind of compliment usually reserved only by native Odessans. Panty is when you are poor, you have nothing, but you walk and talk confidently, so people believe you're really something. My father declares that Matthew is a hero of our time.
After dinner, we dance the night away to a klezmer band that outnumbers our wedding party.
As I've always dreamed, on the shores of the Black Sea.
Other couples who've married that same day hear that a foreigner has paid for a full klezmer band, so they come to dance too.
6 Odessa couples dance on the seashore as the sun sets.
All safely distanced.
On the night before we fly to Canada, we meet with my parents to sip cherry wine on a cobblestone street.
Olga and Eugene's only child is now married, 6 months pregnant, about to fly across the world with a man whose only claim to fame is that he managed to sneak into Ukraine.
It's so hard to say goodbye to my family and to the country that I love. But we discuss when we meet again, when we come back to Odessa, and when my parents meet their grandson.
we say goodbye to Eugene and Olga, not knowing when we'll see them again.
On the flight to Canada, I'm nauseous, dizzy, fighting to breathe in my mask. But at the same time, so excited about the life that we are going to have together. We make a nest in a little one-bedroom apartment in Edmonton, preparing for the arrival of our squeakling.
Before returning to Canada, we were told that Masha would be granted health care as my spouse. But upon arrival, we learned that the authorities don't know how long it will take to process her health care application due to the pandemic. If your health care doesn't come through, we'll have to pay. If we have to pay, the cost could bankrupt us.
As soon as baby is born, he's Canadian. But as long as he's in my womb, he's Ukrainian. I'm no one in Canada. No friends, no career, no healthcare. Zero. I left behind my family. I left behind everything. All I have is in two bags and in my belly.
You have me. So I go to a sweat where prayers are sung for our son and for the health of his mom. My elders speak about our baby in the same way Masha did when she learned we were pregnant, that our baby, our little star being, has chosen us. If you're not happy, we can return to Odessa. We came for the passport and the health care.
Our doula wants me to give birth in a yurt.
I would save a lot of money. Can you imagine the look on your father, who only agreed we should come to Canada because of the health care, when he learned that his grandson was born in Alberta in December in a farmer's field in a yurt?
He would rescind his blessing of this union for sure.
3 days before Masha goes into labor, she gets health care.
Right after my water breaks, we go to the hospital.
We get Masha into a delivery room.
I push for 5 hours.
Without an epidural.
I want the birth to be natural.
Every time Masha feels a contraction coming on, she rallies the nurses with a...
Come on, girls!
I inform the doctor I'm a fainter.
She doesn't let Matthew leave his chair.
How will we know I'm the baby's father?
Yeah, yeah. It's better to crack jokes now than to faint. Come on, girls! I'm exhausted. I want to rest, but I can't. I can't do it. My body's doing it by itself. I'm out of control.
Doctors and nurses flood the room.
I push and I push, but he won't come out.
Masha, our baby is in trouble.
Выходи, выходи, пожалуйста, выходи.
The doctor says they need to help our baby come out.
And I push.
Our baby doesn't cry when he's delivered.
The nurses rush him off.
Don't get up.
I can't hear his voice.
The nurses usher me over. They pass me scissors to cut the last of the umbilical cord.
I hear his voice. The nurses bring our baby boy to me.
Ivan.
Ivan.
Vanya.
Vanyichka. Ivan has come. Straight from the stars. We are now two Pisces with a little Sagittarius. Two water signs joined with a fire sign. He doesn't sleep for more than 1 or 2 hours at a time. But staring into his eyes and holding his tiny hand in mine.
Anyone who tells you that the first few months with a baby are amazing is probably insane. Some moments of peace are found on walks through the river valley, where I tell Ivan about his kukum, Kiskichuan, who is named after the North Saskatchewan. Our people were some of the first in Red River before they made their way to Rosebud, Alberta.
1 year later, we moved to Toronto.
Our life has begun to feel somewhat normal. Ivan still has trouble sleeping, but when he's awake, he's an impossibly cheery fellow. Nevi is an ever-attentive nanny, and I write a radio play about our COVID adventure.
I make a wish for New Year, that Ivan will sleep through the night, and for our return to Ukraine. I imagine the routes we will take when we come back to Odessa and go to my favorite cafes with Matthew and Ivan to have farshmak and then Napoleon cake. I even bought a special sailor suit for Ivan, for him to enter Odessa as a real little Odessa man. And I can't wait for my mom and dad to meet their grandson. February 22nd, 2022. I'm registered in an online acting workshop with a group of Ukrainian actors. Alla, my bridesmaid, the actor, who also takes this workshop, says to me, "How good it is that you're in Canada right now." February 24th, 2022. Russia launches a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. My mother messages me terrified from Odessa. The missiles have hit the port.
Our veteran friends rush to rejoin their units. Two of the veterans, a married couple named Dima and Ira, go to defend the hostile airport outside Kyiv. Dima posts, drank coffee, brushed teeth, waiting for tanks. Both Dima and Ira are killed.
Герої не вмирають.
Heroes never die.
We try to convince my mother to come, but she's too scared. I beg my father to leave. He's 67, old enough to leave Ukraine, but he refuses. He takes his duty as a doctor very seriously. He will stay in Odessa and serve in a hospital, come what may.
The beach where we danced on our wedding night has been mined to guard against amphibious attack.
The grand promenade where we used to sip cherry wine and dance under the light of the moon now has tank traps set up down it.
The opera theater is shuttered, with sandbags piled in front, like Masha's grandfather would have seen during the Second World War.
Ivan won't sleep. With news pouring in, we're just holding on. We convinced my mother to come, to help with her grandson. At 4 a.m., my friend Ola, with her two children, drives my mother out of Odessa.
So that the children won't be afraid, they pretend the soldiers at the checkpoint searching for infiltrators are playing a game.
Ola drops my mother at the Moldovan border, for she could wait for volunteers to come and drive her further. Standing by the side of the road, in the mud, my mother is terrified she will be robbed and murdered.
Two young men arrive, volunteers, and drive Olga to the Moldovan capital, Chisinau.
My friend Natasha lives in Chisinau, and she takes my mother in for 2 nights. But then she has to bus further to Romania, and all the hotels in Bucharest are packed with refugees, so she has to stay at the airport overnight.
The airport attendant gives her a yoga mat to sleep on.
In her fur coat, with 5 currencies stuffed in her bra, my mother lies on a yoga mat at the Bucharest airport. Like millions of Ukrainians, her life has been normal just 2 weeks before.
Flying from Bucharest to Warsaw, Olga transfers to her flight to Canada.
The plane sits on the tarmac and the captain announces that there has been delay from taking off.
Olga panics. She thinks Putin is attacking Poland.
The flight attendant calms her down, saying that they will get her to Toronto.
In the air, the woman beside Olga mutters again and again, "I did not want to leave my Ukraine."
My mother arrives. Very late, so just Matthew goes to meet her.
At the airport, they're not letting people in to meet arrivals due to strict COVID rules.
But suddenly Matthew notices a guy exiting airport with a box of donuts.
"You can't enter the airport to meet family escaping a war zone, but you can enter the airport to buy donuts." With a maple dip in hand, I go to meet Olga. She trembles when we embrace. She says to me, "I am so ashamed. I am so ashamed. I believed him. I believed him when he said he would not invade Ukraine."
My mother and I reunite, laughing and crying.
Olga looks on Ivan like the second coming.
Children are a blessing.
She feeds him a shocking amount of cookies.
And plays his favorite song again and again.
Jujamo's Booty Bounce.
She performs morning exercises with Ivan.
And becomes known throughout Cabbage Town, telling everyone to shh when Ivan is finally asleep.
Matthew stays up late into the night to write.
Masha stays up late into the night messaging friends fleeing Ukraine.
Getting my mother out of Ukraine was a huge relief.
But having Olga stay with us is not without its challenges.
Her nickname at the university was Radio, because there's barely a moment of silence when she's around.
This comes as something of a shock, as Masha is quite quiet and can happily go for hours without saying a word.
My mother is just very gregarious. She has friends all over the world.
Olga believes Ivan's car seat is a torture device, repeatedly taking him out of it while I'm driving.
Car seats were not common during the Soviet times.
When I push Ivan, Olga shuffles beside us, constantly adjusting his straps in case they take on a life of their own and strangle him.
She doesn't trust straps.
Olga's coup de grace is when, after fretting because Ivan hasn't been sleeping, she sneaks in a doctor who used to practice in the former Soviet Union.
She should have asked permission.
The doctor determines that Ivan is perfectly fine, but declares that the high rate of anxiety amongst North Americans is directly attributable to our sleep training method.
Many believe that it's true.
Olga's sleep training must have been brutal.
She has never been an anxious person before the war. Her life is now torn into before and after.
Maria, Masha, Mashenka, Matryoshka, what you must be going through right now. Everyone you have ever known, their lives turned upside down.
My father is so happy we're in Canada right now, so that we don't have to hear what he hears. His brain is misfiring. His whole life, he has been taught that the enemy will come from the West. But now they come from the East. My bridesmaid, Alla, the actor, she stayed in Odessa. With her theater closed, she just wanders empty boulevards, making selfies with stray cats and making patriotic face paintings. I'm afraid Alla won't last long under occupation. My bridesmaid, Alona, she lives in Kyiv, but she is from Mariupol. Alona's mother, her only family member, she still lives there. Russians block all the communications, so Alona loses contact with her mother. After 3 weeks of no word, watching on the news how her hometown is systematically destroyed, she can't take it anymore and goes to find her mother. Alona has to make a journey of 800 kilometers to reach Mariupol. First, she goes to Ukrainian checkpoints, where soldiers can't believe she's going to a city where everyone is fleeing. Then, the invaders' checkpoints. Alona says she has never been more afraid in her whole life, but somehow they let her through. Alona finds an abandoned bicycle on the outskirts of Mariupol. She rides that bicycle through her hometown, which has been largely destroyed to rubble. She takes back alleys and paths, avoiding snipers and tanks, passing the countless bodies of civilians on the streets. Sitting under a bombed-out apartment building, not sure she can go further, suddenly a little girl emerges from below the ground with little pancakes for her. that pancakes give Alyona strength. They give her hope. She reaches her mother's apartment, which is somehow still intact, opens the door, and finds her mother drinking tea at the kitchen table. She takes her mother's hand and rushes her out of Mariupol. Everyone I have ever known now have their lives torn into before and after.
We'll be right back.
I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of 6 darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. You understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
We lie in bed, mostly in our own heads now.
Putin lies between us.
I write, trying to make sense of what is happening to our home.
I message my friends, scattered like leaves around the world.
Realized that for tax purposes, it actually makes sense for us to get a divorce and for you to claim refugee status. We'd obviously remarry.
Matthew's jokes are reaching an intolerable level.
Ivan won't sleep. Disregarding Olga's unlicensed doctor, I convince Masha that we need to hire a sleep trainer to help us to get Ivan to sleep through the night.
But my mom is not on board.
After finally getting him to sleep, Olga sneaks into his room to put a blanket on him, waking him up.
Mothers from Soviet Union have a strong compulsion to keep babies warm, too warm.
Olga sneaks into his room to turn off the fan so he won't go hypothermic in the night in 30 degree heat.
My mother doesn't like ACs or fans.
She sneaks into the room to disable the white noise machine, the sound from which she is convinced is putting pressure on Ivan's brain. I realize I am standing in the hallway not to make sure my son is asleep, but to head off my mother-in-law.
Matthew is very patient with her.
Until August 29th, 2022, when the sleep training battle culminates at 4:30 a.m. on a Monday morning. Ivan crying. Olga tries desperately to intervene, but I block her mad dash. She then proceeds to scream whisper through the crack in her door that I am torturing my son, that the Russians employed similar methods on children in the Soviet Union, that Putin was one of those children, and that this is probably why he's insane. Ivan, finally asleep. I lie awake, seriously considering lacing the banana bread Olga is so fond of with sedative. She is only staying temporarily. Indefinitely. Masha.
Ivan!
Masha.
Ivan, where's Ivan?
Wake up.
I had a dream.
He's okay. He's asleep.
I was in Bucha on a yoga retreat. And Ivan was with me. And then a bomb falls just in front of us. And I grab Ivan and we run from a huge cloud of black smoke that's chasing us. And I'm scared to death. And Ivan is crying. And then I write an address of my aunt in Russia on Ivan's back. Maybe if they kill me, they will at least show my baby mercy.
You need to stop reading the news in the middle of the night.
I know. I know. I'm just so far from my people here, it kills me.
Haunting your sleep with those images isn't helping anybody. It's not your fault you're in a safe place.
I just want to do something. I want to do something helpful, but not donations. They don't need donations. They need their homes. They need to be safe.
We can do something.
What?
We can write.
A play.
Yes. Write it all out. All the pain, all the anger, all the heartbreak you're hearing about.
Well, then it will be an unending monologue about traumatized people. Nobody wants to hear that.
You experience the war through other people's stories. That's a story.
Create a story with my friends and family's stories?
We'll continue from where we ended the radio play.
We'll continue?
Yes.
Is this whole thing some sort of adventure to you? Our marriage? Our son? The war? Is it real for you?
Of course it's real.
No! No, it's not. When my father messages me that the missiles are attacking Odessa, and for the first time in my life he tells me that he is afraid, and I'm lying in bed, praying to God to keep him safe, you're downstairs writing, pretending and playing.
I'm writing so I don't lose my mind.
It's an action-adventure to you. It's theoretical.
Your mother is very, very real.
She's our guest here.
She's not a guest. She's an occupying force.
Enough! This is my life. I'm not going to transform my friends and family's destroyed lives into art. I'm not going to be the source of inspiration for your next play.
So, Masha goes. Ivan, Olga, Nevi, and I meet her absence together bravely at first. Ivan's always been patient with me when his boots have been put on the wrong feet or when I try to get sweaters over his sizable head. I feel your pain, little man. But after 3 days with Masha gone, Ivan's patience comes to an end. Not wishing to stand in the hallway, I sit on the floor in Ivan's room. He will not stop hysterically crying. So I make the decision to climb into the crib to comfort him. And whether because of shock or because he's exhausted, he starts to laugh. Ha ha ha, Papa. To keep him on side, I tell him what life was like before. Before Mama and Papa got together. Before we welcomed Vanichka. Before a war on the other side of the world turned our lives upside down. Before life got real. He is asleep. Ever so carefully, I separate myself from him. Climb out the crib, catch my foot, and crash into the dresser. No, sweetheart. Papa didn't mean to break the lamp. Most papas are too tall to even consider climbing into a crib. Yes, sweetheart. Papa has a little cut, and there's some blood, which we are full of. And yes, sweetheart, Papa is a fainter.
So, I go to Niagara. I rent a little room in the hotel with a view of the falls. I buy a bottle of champagne and a pack of cigarettes. I sit and smoke on the balcony, trying to feel the freedom I used to have before. Before I got married, before I gave birth. Like I'm in Ukraine, before the war. Young and hopeful. Feel it. Feel it. You escaped. This is your moment. Feel the freedom, goddammit! I book an excursion with a Ukrainian group. Yes, we're everywhere. It's so comforting to hear my people talking, marveling in the lights of the attractions, complaining about the weather and the cuisine. We finish at the fireworks. I've always loved fireworks, and they are fantastic at the falls. But someone is crying. The girl from our group. She sits on the ground, holding her knees, rocking back and forth. She's from Mariupol, the women of our group say. Why has she come on this excursion if she has just fled the war? Maybe she just wanted to relax too? To escape? To forget? Maybe she didn't even consider she would be under attack at the falls. Maybe she believed she was just a normal person? Another young, hopeful Ukrainian on an excursion. No, sweetheart. Nothing is normal anymore. Nothing will be as it used to be before. I hold her close. Fireworks drown out her sobs. Her chest heaving against mine. Her heart trying to escape so much pain. Back to the hotel, I try to fall asleep. It's so quiet and cold. No one's waiting for me. My mom is not here offering me some soup. Ivan is not running up to me. Hi, Mama. Hey, Mom. Matt is not here. But I constantly talk to him in my head.
I regain consciousness. Ivan is crying. Olga is keening. Nevi is licking my wound. Have we been hit by a missile? No. No. We are safe. We are safe in sleepy Toronto. But Masha... Masha is not here. An adventure. Is this an adventure? Meeting Masha was a game changer. A real TSN turning point for sure. But we didn't know. We didn't know how it would be when we were together after having our baby, actually. Had I been a touch infatuated when we met? Yes. Masha's a goddamn hobbit goddess. So I'd be lying if I said that I didn't share some of my mom's worry that things had developed a bit quickly. How could we know what we were getting into when we hardly knew who we were getting married to? So sure, I kind of turned my concerns inside out. I transformed what initially felt like a heart attack when we learned we were pregnant into the spark that lit the fire of an adventure to get to Masha, to bring her here. We jumped through hoop after hoop after flaming hoop. We were just about to return to Odessa, and invaders poured across the border. It's agonizing to watch her disappear inside herself. This in-between place, she's not here, she's not there. The jokes are an attempt to coax her out. And yes, to cope. Asking her to write this play was an attempt to coax her out. Because I may not have known what I was getting into when I married Masha, but I certainly know now. The way Ivan looks at her, like she's the most amazing person in the world. I feel you, little fellow. I don't want what's happening there to extinguish her here.
I didn't want to write this play. I felt empty and torn. All I had inside was a reflection of the war. What can I create in this state of mind? Should I still be an actor? What for? Who needs this poetry anymore? After all those centuries with great literature, music, theater, high culture, was this high culture so high that it didn't even consider the evil that had taken hold of its core? Or was this high culture not concerned with politics? Like me, before the war, I was so cultural. But I don't want to hate. I don't want to kill. I want to stop this war. What can I do? If I don't have the gun, what is my weapon? Words? A voice. I'm not going to be silent. I'm not going to stuff it all inside anymore. I have to speak. And I don't care if it's art or not. I feel that my voice means something. My life means something. I'm here. And people who live inside of me, they are here. And their stories have value, too. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Well, how are you?
Fine. I had a nice time on the falls.
Cigarettes and champagne?
Mm-hmm. Quite relaxing. I missed you terribly. I was thinking about you and Ivan all the time.
We missed you too. Ivan refuses to sleep in his crib now.
I thought I would feel better on my own, but I felt so empty without you too.
It wasn't fun with you gone.
We're both Pisces. All this can work really well or go down in flames, no in between.
We have to stay out of our brains.
No matter what's happening in our family.
No matter what is happening geopolitically.
We must face reality.
No more fantasy.
No more disappearing in front of your eyes.
This is real.
This is real. I need you.
I need you too.
On my mom's 60th birthday, which she desperately wanted to celebrate in Ukraine, we host a little party in Cabbage Town, and after dinner we play 20 questions, and when my mom is asked who her hero is, without hesitation she answers, Matthew.
I will admit to feeling a slight twinge of guilt at this moment for considering lacing Olga's banana bread with sedative.
Slowly, Ivan learns how to sleep through the night.
We follow a strict routine.
First, we read.
Then we say goodnight to Olga and to Nevi.
And then we blow kisses to Ukraine. Today, Ukraine fights to take back her territory.
Today, Ivan is potty training. And Olga and I have come to an understanding.
We don't know if Putin will drop a bomb.
We don't know if we're on the precipice of a world war.
We don't know when peace will be declared.
We don't know when Ivan will meet his grandfather Eugene in Odessa.
But we do have hope.
We have our son. Dear Ivan.
Dear Ivan.
You have been our laughing. dancing little star through this war.
When peace will be declared,
two small birds
and their little squeakling
will soar.
They will follow the Kissaskatchewan River
till they reach Lake Winnipeg,
where they will dance a matey jig with a chickadee.
Follow the river to the Hudson's Bay.
Fly across the ocean.
Follow the chain of the Pyrenees.
Then the arc of the Alps.
The sickle of the Carpathians.
Where custom dictates they must dance a hopak with a tomtit.
Follow the Danube.
Until they reach the Black Sea.
Then follow the shore.
Until they come to Ukraine.
Then you will have come full circle, Vanichka.
First matey man of Odessa.
That was the conclusion to First Matey Man of Odessa, written and performed by Matthew McKenzie and Maria Homotova. Wow, Chris, what a beautiful play that was. And while, of course, Madame Maria's story is far from over, it does leave on a hopeful note, which is something I think we could really use right about now. There are so many difficult things going on in the world. And I think the reason that we like romantic stories like this is because we really do want to believe that love can conquer all. That is the most hopeful thing that we as humans can believe, and their hope and resilience is really inspiring.
Mm-hmm. I think we also have to keep in mind just how hard this kind of work, you know, documentary theater, is to do. And, you know, you and I can attest to that, having done quite a bit of verbatim theater ourselves. You're not only putting your own raw emotions out on stage, but you're also portraying your own actions. And sometimes that may not be pretty. That may not be what we want to put out there. But not only are you writing about yourself, you're also having to write about other people. I think one of my favorite stories is at the end of one of our recordings when you asked Matt how his mother-in-law felt about the portrayal of herself in the show. And she read it over and she came back to him and said, "I think you need to revise it so that you put poison in the tea for me instead of just sedative." And I think that's great because she saw the story and she saw how to heighten the stakes and she didn't take it personally. And I think Matt and Maria really got off lucky there. And we'll be back next week with an in-depth interview with Maria and Matthew, who talk about why they wanted to put their love story on stage, how their love of theater bonded them, and their concerns about Putin and the future of the conflict in Ukraine.
And if you're looking for another play that is romantic and deals with love, although in a totally different way, we want to recommend the funny and poignant Sexy Laundry by Michelle Rimmel, available now on our Play Me feed.
First Matey Man of Odessa was written and performed by Matthew McKenzie and Maria Homotova. The original theatrical production was directed by Leanna McCool.
First Matey Man of Odessa premiered as a national tour at the Theatre Centre in Toronto and has gone on to the Citadel Theatre, Western Canada Theatre and the Kulch, with upcoming dates at Soul Pepper and the National Arts Centre. This episode's sound design, edit, and mix are by Gregory J. Sinclair. Thanks for listening.
We'd love to know what you think about Play Me. You can connect with us by emailing playme@cbc.ca. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Play Me wherever you get your podcasts. By subscribing, you can listen to all our past shows and you won't miss a single one of our new episodes. And while you're there, we would love it if you would consider rating and reviewing us. It helps spread the word about our podcast, bringing theater to a whole new audience. Play Me is produced by Laura Mullen and Chris Tolley in partnership with CBC Podcasts. Our associate producer is Brianne Tice. A special thanks to our CBC team. Anna Achete is our digital producer, and our executive producer is Cecil Fernandez.
The director of CBC Podcasts is Arif Narani, and the executive director is Leslie Merklinger.
Play Me is funded by the Canada Council for the Arts and the Ontario Arts Council. Play Me is an Expect Theatre production. For more information about our plays, please visit playmepodcast.com.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.